Data centers are coming to the natural state. What does that mean for Arkansans? An army of clipboard-wielding volunteers collects signatures for potential ballot measures, and we'll hear more about how one Northwest Arkansas city uses high-tech to tackle hunger. Those stories and more are coming up this week on the News Draft from the Arkansas Newsroom. I'm Daniel Breen, News Director of Little Rock Public Radio. Each week, we're recapping the top stories from all across the natural state. We'll unpack the headlines, share exclusive insights, and provide the context you need to fully grasp the issues that matter most to Arkansans. That's this week on the Arkansas News Wrap, coming up right after the news from NPR. This is the Arkansas News Wrap. I'm Daniel Breen with Little Rock Public Radio. New large-scale data centers are cropping up across the U.S., but not without pushback. Now, business leaders and elected officials in central Arkansas are defending two data center projects planned for the region. Little Rock Public Radio's Maggie Ryan spoke with the Arkansas Advocate's Ainsley Platt about how the projects are panning out and what they could mean for future neighbors.
Okay, so there are two data center projects being developed in the Little Rock area right now. One is at the Port of Little Rock and one in South Pulaski County. Tell us about these projects. What do we know?
Yeah, so right now we know that these centers are coming from two different sources. One of them is from a company called Aveo Digital, and then the other one is from Google, although that one right now is still more of a proposal than a done deal.
How far along are these projects?
So when I say that Google isn't quite a done deal, they have said that it's still just a proposal, right? But they are still going through the regulatory process with the Google one. Right now, they are looking to get inspections from the federal government or permissions from the federal government about filling in wetlands. And that's a big one. That was just at public comment with the U.S. Corps of Engineers. I believe the public comment on that has closed. I think it closed at the beginning of this month. The Aveo Center, that one's in the county, so it doesn't have to go through as many of the permitting or the zoning things that it would have to go through in the city of Little Rock the way that the Google one has to.
Okay, let's focus on Google's proposal. What's happening there? What is that permitting process like?
So right now, because Google wants to build this center in an area with a lot of wetlands, they have to get approval from the Corps of Engineer through what is called a Section 404 review. And basically, they go to the Corps of Engineers and they say, hey, we want to fill these wetlands, or we want to dredge these wetlands, or we want to do something to these wetlands. And they basically have to get permission from the federal government to do that.
Okay, so this week, leaders of utility companies in Central Arkansas held a press conference with the Little Rock Regional Chamber to address concerns about the data centers, these environmental concerns, worries about rising energy and water costs for residents. What happened there?
Yeah, so at the very start of the press conference, you had folks coming up and saying, you know, we want to correct, quote, misinformation, end quote, that's been circulating in the community. You know, there have been a lot of concerns nationally about what data centers are going to do to electric bills, water bills. They're very resource intensive facilities. And, you know, you had Tad Bohannon, CEO of Central Arkansas Water there. You had somebody from Entergy Arkansas there who were basically saying along the lines of, this is not going to affect the reliability of these utilities. This is not going to increase bills. And they were essentially trying to assuage the fears that have been popping up, not just here in Little Rock, but nationally.
Were their arguments convincing?
You know, the interesting thing about the whole data center situation is that right now there really isn't a lot concrete that is known about how much water or how much power they are going to use. One of the things that Tad Bohannon said during this press conference was that they were expecting that on the hottest days of the year, one of the data centers basically would use around 4 million gallons a day on the hottest day. And he was very careful to say, you know, that wouldn't be every single day of the year, right? But with Entergy, for example, a lot of the information about how much water or sorry, about how much electricity this would use, you know, it isn't public knowledge at this point.
And so on the water side of this, why do data centers need water?
So data centers basically are giant computers, right? They are servers, and they are doing complex calculations. They are running artificial intelligence, and that generates a lot of heat. They get really hot. Think about when, you know, you have 16 tabs open on your laptop and the bottom of it starts getting really hot. It's the same concept. They need to cool these servers so that they can still work. And so a lot of the times that requires water, that requires big fans, all of which are very resource intensive. That's why you're seeing headlines around the country about people being worried about their utility bills going up and, you know, the water, about the water situations.
So these leaders have given estimates of how the resources will be used. What will the impact be to customers?
So right now, the utilities have been very adamant that, you know, residential customers are not going to be bearing the cost of this. I asked Entergy very directly during this press conference, you know, will any costs be shifted to residential customers as a result of the needs of these data centers? And they said pretty explicitly, no. The same thing with Tad Bohannon and Central Arkansas Water. He said, you know, we don't split these kinds of costs. We have set costs for residential. We have set costs for industrial. You know, we don't make residential pay for industrial costs.
That was Tuesday morning. Tuesday evening, you went to the Pulaski County Quorum Court. What happened there?
Yeah, so there were a number of ordinances and resolutions on the agenda that would essentially establish some kind of framework for regulating data centers within the county. Almost immediately, as soon as the meeting started, one of the justices of the peace, he basically said, you know, we really shouldn't be hasty about this. This is the kind of thing that could affect the county for a really long time. You know, this could be like a backdoor to zoning. We should have the planning department look at this before we make a decision. And so after about an hour and a half of debate, you know, they did vote to send those to the planning department for a 90-day review. And there were mentions of holding public comment and public meetings on this. So it's not the last we've heard of it.
Ainsley, thanks for bringing down this topic for us. Is there anything else you think people should know?
You know, I'll just reiterate what I've already said. This is part of a national trend where these data centers are coming in and local communities are really, really concerned about the water, about the electric use, about the noise, and about how it could affect the communities that they live in. And that's happening nationwide right now.
Okay, that's the Arkansas Advocate's Ainsley Platt talking about her reporting on data centers in Pulaski County. Ainsley, thanks for joining us.
Thanks.
That was Little Rock Public Radio's Maggie Ryan speaking with the Arkansas Advocate's Ainsley Platt. And you can read Ainsley's full story on the burgeoning data center projects online at arkansasadvocate.com. Volunteers armed with clipboards will be collecting signatures at Arkansas festivals and farmers markets over the next 7 weeks as three initiative campaigns race to qualify for the November ballot. The Arkansas Advocate's Antoinette Grajeda has this story.
All right, have a great day.
A busker on the corner of the downtown Fayetteville Square provides the soundtrack for a family buying strawberries at a small farmers market on this sunny spring morning. Nearby, Bill and Marla Dollar invite passersby to sign petitions for ballot measures.
Let the people vote for it if they want. That's democracy.
The Dollars are two of the many volunteers around the state collecting signatures for three proposed constitutional amendments.
Just trying to help save democracy. So,
yeah, and I think it's important that we should have the right to get things on the ballot. Let the people decide.
The groups backing these measures have until July 3rd to collect nearly 91,000 signatures to qualify their proposals for the November ballot. Save Our Democracy is one of two groups proposing a constitutional amendment to strengthen the state's direct democracy process. This process allows Arkansans to propose new laws or constitutional amendments and place them on the ballot for a statewide vote. Supporters of the proposals have said they're needed to combat the passage of several laws in recent years that have made the initiative and referendum process more difficult. Proponents of the laws say they protect the integrity of the process. Bonnie Miller, Save Our Democracy chair and League of Women Voters of Arkansas president, says their all-volunteer campaign is not yet halfway to their signature goal. While the looming July 3rd deadline is stressful, Miller remains optimistic.
We're rolling ahead. We're not going to stop. And you never know. I've been involved in several of these campaigns, and sometimes magic just really happens at the end.
Miller says the goal of the proposal is to safeguard direct democracy, which is not a partisan issue.
We see people all across the political spectrum who use this process to put forth, you know, their ideas, their policies. That's democracy.
Preserving this tool is also important to protect our rights, who is pursuing its own amendment that would make the initiative and referendum process a, quote, fundamental right. Bill Kopsky, executive director of the Arkansas Public Policy Panel and a member of the Protect Our Rights Coalition, says these protections are necessary because lawmakers are constantly attacking the direct democracy process.
We run a real risk of losing the right to petition government through ballot measures if we don't pass the ballot measure rights amendment.
The Arkansas Public Policy Panel is also working with the For Our Kids Coalition, who is pursuing an education-focused amendment. Among other things, it would require private schools receiving state funds under Arkansas's school voucher program to meet the same standards as public schools. Organizers say they can always use more volunteers, not only for collecting signatures, but for notarizing forms, transporting petitions, raising funds, and spreading the word about their measures. The dollars say it's important to work together to ensure Arkansans can participate in the democratic process.
We just need to all get involved. Any way you can.
We talked to a woman today who said that she was volunteered to drive people to the polls on election day. So something as simple as that, in her neighborhood, there are people who couldn't go vote because they didn't have transportation. So in any manner that you can help get the vote, then we think that that's important because that's the will of the people.
Although collecting nearly 91,000 signatures is a tall task, Bill says gathering a few signatures every day can add up.
It's sort of like eating an elephant, one bite at a time, and that's what we're trying to do, just keeps kind of slogging through.
It's gonna be all right come November, trust me.
That was Antoinette Grajeda with the Arkansas Advocate reporting. One Northwest Arkansas food pantry is taking a new approach to making their services more accessible. More from KUAF's Matthew Moore.
It's a sunny afternoon at the Squire Jehagan Outreach Center in Fayetteville, and Juanalitha Anderson is wheeling a cart of goods outside. She joins Monique Jones, the Director of Outreach and Community Engagement at the historic St. James Missionary Baptist Church. And a major part of that outreach is running the operations of its food pantry. Anderson is taking those goods from her cart into a locker system, and Jones reads off the order.
You'll see on this order that there's a request for dry black beans, mixed fruit cup, white quinoa, dried diced fruit cups, assorted chips, assorted fruits, assorted vegetables, assorted proteins, mac and cheese, canned tuna, canned diced peaches, applesauce, elbow pasta, liquid dish soap, bread, and cheesy dinner. So you can see a variety of not just food items, but also household items from the dish soap.
These lockers are massive. Four rows of four. The whole structure stands about 8 feet tall, about 11 feet wide. It's simultaneously complex and simple. Anderson holds a standard piece of paper sideways. She's double-checking the order before entering the details into the touchscreen, smack dab in the center of the lockers.
So we entered the associate code that we've received. Then we entered the delivery code that is associated with this order. And once she loads this locker, it immediately sends a text message or email, whichever one they chose, to load the locker. I'm going to have you come over just for a minute and just tell me what you see.
Oh, yeah. No, this is like a literally like a crisper drawer in a fridge.
Jones says the climate control on these lockers can be set per row. Heated for a hot meal, ambient for shelf-stable goods, cold for refrigerated goods, and freezer for, well, frozen foods. These smart food lockers are available here in Fayetteville thanks to grant funding from Walmart and the University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences. Pearl McElfish is the director of the Institute for Community Health Innovation at UAMS. She says working with a faith-based partner like St. James to install these smart food lockers is important for many reasons.
One, they are in the heart of the community and are just such an incredible force in the community. And also, they were able to help us consider what would it look like if we had a food access point that was available 24 hours a day.
That 24-hour availability, that's critical to the project. The typical hours of the food pantry are Tuesdays and Thursdays, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. But if you can't come during that time frame, you can still get food through the food pantry. The food pantry has an online platform where clients can choose what foods they want on their order. That's that sheet of paper she was reading from earlier. Jones says one demographic that she sees taking advantage of the lockers, the Alice community. Asset limited, income constrained, and employed.
I want you to remember the last E of Alice is these are employed individuals. I'm talking about people that work specifically at the high school in nutrition department. I'm talking about teachers. I'm talking about people that work in governmental jobs that will come here and say, hey, I have a paycheck. I'm doing really good, but I'm still struggling on my food portion. How can I help? And we will connect them to the food storage locker.
Jones says when it comes to the cultural and religious diversity in the region, allowing clients to choose what they prefer to eat means the food they receive gets eaten.
I am trying to empower that, and I'm trying to empower that with dignity. So that's where that client choice. I'm not giving you something, you're actually getting to choose what you prefer and your family prefers to eat. We're also trying to prevent food waste. So if I don't even eat chicken noodles, I mean chicken ramen, but if somebody else does and that's what they prefer, then that's good.
McElfish says allowing choice and allowing pickup at your convenience means people are significantly more likely to eat produce. In fact, 75% of the participants in UAMS's study reported an increase in fruits and vegetables.
And so providing that access really allowed people who needed it the most to have access to foods and healthy foods. I think there's also a certain degree of humanity about it, that they can choose among some items that are available, what they will eat, they can schedule the pickup. So I do think that it gives some autonomy and some humanity to addressing food insecurity.
Well, it's funny you use the word humanity because you're talking about a bit of a like self-checkout kind of situation here. So there's not a lot of, there doesn't have to be a lot of personal interaction. So humanity for you, I think the way you're using that term is more of just like, I'm a human who needs things.
Yeah. So you make a good point. It really is maybe double-sided in that often people do get a lot of wraparound services at a food pantry, and they're provided things like help with filling out Medicaid applications and help with housing. But at the same time, if they're not able to come in at that time, then the humanity is access and not alienating someone or not disallowing someone the services they need simply because they can't show up at a certain time.
We saw that humanity in action as Anderson continued to load more lockers.
Some of these families are way bigger than what's on the paper. We've got families of eight that are eating out of these lockers, and sometimes I double their food. I know these people and I work with them so much. I know who needs extra. I know who doesn't ask for toilet tissue but needs it. I know who needs paper towels, diapers, wipes. So if it's a big family, I try to double up when I can when we have extra. So sometimes it'll take up multiple lockers. But I'm just more concerned about making sure these people have enough food to get them through the week. So it's going a long way. These lockers are feeding a lot of people.
When you think about the personal relationship that you have with these folks, I mean, what is it? I mean, how personal are you able to get in the 5-10 minutes you get to see them on a regular basis?
Well, honestly, you don't get to see the people in the lockers unless they're picking up. But what I have done is just started reaching out to them and calling them when they put certain comments in, or I do surveys as well. Since we don't get to interact with them and our DoorDash participants, we survey a lot. That's how I figured out we needed more dairy. They're asking for more dairy, so I wrote a grant And I got that for them, more nutritious food, you know, more recipes. So it's just, even though we don't see each other, we're still in constant communication because this is solely for them. And we want to make sure that we're providing just the daily essentials just to make their life better. So that's one less thing they have to stress about.
There are some known drawbacks to the lockers. One, it's not immediate. If you place an order on Monday, the order won't be ready for pickup until Wednesday. And if you don't have a smartphone, or you just don't feel equipped to use the technology, that's a barrier too. We've previously reported on a more lo-fi version of this concept, friendly fridges. Mikkel Fish with UAMS is encouraged by the generosity of her neighbors when she sees the little food pantries or the friendly fridges.
I put things in mine every week and love just having that neighbor helping neighbor component. And we absolutely need the large food pantries and this kind of more industrialized system for food insecurity. Whether it is the food lockers or the little food pantries we see at local schools or a refrigerator plugged in outside, all of those have this consistent theme of we live in Northwest Arkansas, where many people have access to foods. We want all of our neighbors to have not just food, but healthy food.
We have a friendly fridge up front.
Monique Jones again.
We can't just assume everybody has access to Wi-Fi, a smartphone, and they can place orders and they know how to get on emails. I actually teach computer classes to some of our elderly community, so telling them, scan this QR code and do this, they're thinking, what is a QR code? So having a friendly fridge takes away the stigma around, I don't really understand technology, and oh, you have some fruits and vegetables and sandwiches and milk out in the friendly fridge, I can just stop by and pick those up. The great thing is they also have the number to Appleseed's that if they feel like it's empty, that they can reach out and say, hey, I went by this friendly fridge at the Squire Center and there's no food in there, and they can come back over and fill it.
This location in Fayetteville is a pilot for a program that both UAMS and St. James hopes will grow. Jones says she wants to see more lockers in Fayetteville. She says they've been trying to figure out how to get one on the west side of town. Mikkel Fish is thinking bigger than Fayetteville.
And I think also in rural communities, because it's great in Northwest Arkansas, but when you think about a place like Huntsville or Berryville, I think that the ability to get to a food pantry when it's open becomes much more difficult. And so I think that this could really be a wonderful solution for rural areas.
You can find more details about how to support the Squire Center Outreach Center at the link at our website, KUAF.com.
That was KUAF's Matthew Moore reporting. And that's it for this week. The Arkansas News Wrap is brought to you by the Arkansas Newsroom, a collaboration between KUAF in Fayetteville, KASU in Jonesboro, and Little Rock Public Radio. You can find this week's episode on any of our station's websites. Until next time, I'm Daniel Breen, and this is the Arkansas News Wrap.